The global competition to find a vaccine is fierce. At least 130 labs are racing to be first. That is a good thing. It increases the odds of finding a way to halt the pandemic. At the same time, it's worrisome. With so many competing interests, it's far from clear how people across the world could have equitable access to a new vaccine. It's a problem, says Jane Halton, a former WHO board member, who calls this vaccine nationalism.
I worry that some countries will see that there is strategic advantage in the use of any developed vaccine if they are successful. I also think that there is, in some cases, a need to deal with domestic concerns, and I understand that. Being able to balance a need for domestic distribution, particularly for the vulnerable, but at the same time acknowledging that all countries are in this together. I think there's a middle line to be struck here.
Yeah, I mean, scientific teams in countries around the globe are trying to develop a vaccine, and there is a fear that a country could hoard the vaccine or keep it to themselves. I mean, so you're saying that fear is real?
Yes. So vaccine nationalism is how I've been describing this, where one country seeks to preference their entire population over the vulnerable in the rest of the world. Now, at the end of the day, I think personally that is short-sighted, because if one country still has people with the virus, it affects all of us.
So if the goal of a vaccine is to stop the virus globally, what is the smartest way to distribute a hypothetical vaccine at some point?
The smartest way would be to ensure that the global allocation mechanism, which is being talked about and currently developed, will actually ensure that the vulnerable of the world get priority. We need a mechanism globally to decide, firstly, who those people are, and then secondly, to make sure that they are the first to receive this vaccine. There's still a way to go before we're in this position, but if we don't talk about this now, if we don't get it agreed now, I genuinely fear that we will see what happened in 2009, that the wealthy countries of the world will preference their entire populations before we actually provide vaccine to the truly vulnerable right around the world.
Remind us, 2009, what happened then?
2009, swine flu, as it was known. Basically, the big wealthy countries already had pre-pandemic contracts in place. And even though we had a global discussion about there being a proportion of vaccine provided to the rest of the world, even though in some cases people promised 10% of vaccine production, that wasn't delivered in all cases. So that meant that the wealthy were protected and people without those resources, without manufacturing onshore and the research, developed their own vaccines. They missed out.
The mantra these days is we're all in this together. Is there a way to actually get people to be embracing that idea in a very practical sense when it comes to a vaccine?
Well, of course, we can't make people. And I'm reminded of when my children were little and we all used to say to them, you know, play nice. And that's essentially what we're asking people to do here. We can't make people. We can't force them. But what I think we can do is be clear about what the globe's expectations are, that because we don't know who will succeed in the development of a vaccine, if we all agree that there, obviously, in any one country, there is a need to meet domestic demand, particularly for the vulnerable. But if you're not looking out for everybody else, who's going to look out for you if you don't get there first?
Jane Halton is a commissioner in Australia's National COVID-19 Coordination Commission. She's also a former member of the WHO Executive Board. Thank you very much for being with us again, Jane Halton.
Thank you. My pleasure.